Want a recipe for success? Step one, visit OCDFamilyPodcast.com/courses. Step two, click on my link to browse OCD Training School's amazing course catalog. Step three, enroll. And step four, enjoy learning. With no added cost to you, you can support the OCD family community while grabbing some continuing education or learning how to bridge yourself to self-help strategies for OCD. Again, that's OCDFamilyPodcast.com/courses. And use my special link to sign up today.
Hey there, OCD family community. It's December already, and we are in the midst of many holidays. So let's kick back as I welcome back my handsome hubs for some ho-ho holiday fun. Because who said we can't have a little fun at OCD's expense? It is the season of giving, after all.
I'm Nicole Morris, licensed marriage and family therapist and mental health correspondent. And let me be the first to say, welcome to the family. The OCD family, that is. I am here to create a community of support for family members, spouses, partners, parents, adult children, as there may be adult words, and chosen family of OCD sufferers and their community. I've had over 22 years of experience in the mental health field, but please note that this information does not qualify or substitute as a diagnostic evaluation, therapy, or treatment, and it is presented on an as-is basis. Please follow up with a qualified mental health provider in your area regarding concerns for yourself or loved ones. Thank you for joining us today. Now, let's get started.
Alrighty. So fam, welcome back to the show. It's wild to me that it's December already. I'm in denial. Ugh. And for those of us here in the US that just had Thanksgiving was late this year. So it kind of feels like the holiday seasons are just all smushed together and it's making for a very busy season. In fact, my handsome hubs and I are about to board a flight for his company Christmas party. And then we have recitals and Christmas programs and birthdays. Oh my, it's a lot. So we're taking some time to play a holiday-themed game while catching up with my hubby, Patrick Morris. And when we recorded this not too long ago, we realized that this was Patrick's first appearance on the pod this season. So that's a fun little fact as well. In today's games, we're going to be targeting and having a bit of fun with different obsessional doubts. And obsessional doubts do vary, but as we are all joining with different experiences and at different points in our family's journeys, I'll just mention a brief trigger warning that we will discuss doubts involving theft or moral themes, harm and or assault themes, or suggestive of substance use. Again, it's all for psychoeducational purposes, but I still try to be mindful and provide that trigger warning when applicable. So please proceed with discretion, and hey, ready fam? Let's play. Okay, welcome back, Patrick Morris. Welcome. It's that time of year.
Sure is.
When the world falls in love and the songs you hear seem to say, it's holiday time. And so we are having our annual, at this point, annual
holiday
extravaganza. That's
nice.
Right.
And I am feeling really good about the game that I created today.
I know. You've mentioned it to me a few times, so I know it's going to be good.
Because I know you, Morris, and I think you're going to like this. Also, you have crafted me a garlic martini.
Uh-huh.
That's right, family. I said garlic, and it is stirred.
Sounds bad, but you're wrong. It's delicious.
It's stirred, not shaken.
Of course, no martini should be shaken.
You know what?
Sorry.
Yes, James Bond led us all astray. Yeah. And a couple of years ago, we discovered the magic of a stirred martini, particularly the garlic martini. Oh my gosh.
Yes. Actually, I kind of invented it myself and then found out it already existed. It was one of those things I was like, ooh, I could make a garlic martini, something super umami and delicious. So I formulated it and I made my own recipe. And then turns out other people already did it. But I didn't copy anybody, I swear.
I believe you.
I literally made it up.
You were in your mixologist era.
That's right. Well, I still am. I never leave it.
I know.
Actually, since COVID.
Yeah. We had my parents over, though, and I was like, Dad, you like garlic. And
oh, yeah. He was so skeptical.
He was skeptical. And so I was like, you should try this, which for anybody going like, why in the world would you? There's actually in California, both in Northern California and Southern California, a delicious, delicious restaurant called the Stinkin' Rose.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a garlic-centric restaurant. Like everything, down to the ice cream, garlic ice cream.
Oh, yeah. Very good stuff, too.
It's amazing. This drink.
You smell like garlic for a few days after.
You do.
But it's worth it.
this drink could be a bestseller.
Oh, yeah.
On their menu.
I think so. I think I could improve it further, but you have to have expensive ingredients to take it to the next level.
I mean, you could roast the garlic.
I don't know.
People are like, what? But we gave it to my dad, who likes a little more simple of a drink.
Mm-hmm.
And I filmed it because it was very entertaining and worth commemorating the memory.
Right, right.
He said it tasted like garlic bread.
Mm-hmm.
Tastes like garlic.
I agree that it does not taste like garlic bread. However, that's a compliment coming from him.
It is.
Because he likes garlic bread quite a bit. Wow. Everybody does.
Uh-huh.
Well, no, like we... Like we are
garlic bread shaming.
No, that is not what I mean. I just mean he really likes it. Like, I know he does because we've made food in our house and we've had different things and he loves garlic.
To be fair,
I love garlic bread.
Right.
He eats it.
To be fair, vampires.
Okay.
Count Chocula. I don't know.
Yeah.
But to be fair,
we don't have any of those in our family that we know of.
Luke doesn't like garlic bread.
Yeah.
Okay.
But Luke's Luke.
To be fair, though, most of our cooking, like garlic and some kind of sauteed onion.
Oh, yeah.
Almost everything we make.
And anything that says add, you know, like three or four cloves of garlic, that means 5 or 6. And then if it doesn't call for garlic, that means at least some garlic.
Oh,
usually.
Yeah. We have many.
Like if it's a soup, it has garlic. If it is, you know, a pasta or something. Usually there's going to be some sauteed garlic in.
We have many garlic presses. And I feel like we had a really good one when we first got married and then it kind of died. And now all our garlic presses are like, I can't.
Every time we get a garlic press, it falls apart.
Yeah, we use that press. But anyway, so a garlic martini for me. You've got some scotch for yourself, it looks like. And another game episode. It's been a hot minute. Is this the first time you've been on this season, maybe?
I think so.
I think this might be. Yeah. All right. Well, welcome there.
Thank you. Winter edition.
The winter edition. Yeah. What I will say is it's been a rough, hard year overall.
Yeah.
And
it has.
I say that because for anybody listening, kind of going into the holiday season that's all bright and cheery, sometimes it's hard to feel like you belong if you're not feeling bright and cheery. And I'm here to say you belong and, you know, we all have our things. We all go through our things.
If you are not having a good holiday season, you are not alone.
That's right.
Lots of people don't have good holiday seasons.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah. Or moments, maybe not even a whole season, but it can feel like the whole season.
Absolutely.
And so if you're joining us and that's you, hopefully we can bring a smile to your face on some of this. And if we can't, that's okay.
Yeah, we'll give it a try.
But I feel very good about this game. Okay.
Sure.
So a little backstory, y'all.
But do you feel good about the game?
But how do I feel?
I mean, it's so subtle. I really have to double check before we go into this. Do you like the game?
I like the game. I tell you, it involves storytelling.
Nope.
Which Patrick enjoys. The storytelling.
I'm pretty good at that.
Yeah, we can both create a scene. Also, involves the cute. It involves ChatGPT. Although I have to say, ChatGPT gave me a relic of the bones for today's game. I had to basically bring the meat of the content, but I feel very proud of that.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, so we're going to have a fun game. I think it'll be fun. For anybody that doesn't know, in my spare time when I'm not chatting about OCD and treating OCD and helping my kids or us with lived experience with OCD, I enjoy following legal commentators and law drama. And so I combined my love of OCD with a legal style game because in honor of inference-based CBT, otherwise known as ICBT, one of the skills that we work on is trying to determine the direct evidence we have to support a thought. Because if we don't have direct evidence and it's purely in the imagination, then we know straight up that's OCD.
It's ego dystonic.
Ooh, yeah.
Don't forget that.
Oh, I would never. Slow ego dystonic.
You've taught me well.
You know what? Why don't you tell for any new listeners going to ego dystonic? What that means.
Okay, fair. All right.
Tell them the word and they can use it in their rendition of Cards Against Humanity this
year. Ego dystonic versus ego syntonic, two different words. Ego dystonic means a thought or feeling, would you say?
Sure.
Yeah.
Sensation.
A thought, feeling, or sensation that goes against your values, things you do not want.
Unwanted.
Unwanted, essentially.
Distressing.
Ego syntonic are thoughts, feelings, sensations that are in line with your values.
Yeah, that's pretty good. So
it's not OCD if they're ego syntonic, right? Because they're important to mention.
Yes. Well, thank you for mentioning that. Okay, so today, and a shout out to my colleague, Catherine Goldhouse, because she has made some really helpful graphics. You can check her out on Instagram at ICBT Therapist. And she talks about the evidence that we come up with. Would it pass in the court of law? Or is it hearsay? Is it circumstantial personal experience? Is it based on facts, but not facts that are relevant to here and now because I don't have evidence for it here and now, just general kind of facts like germs exist, things like that. And so we today are playing Christmas Courtroom.
Ooh.
The preliminary hearing edition.
Nice.
Yes, where evidence is regarded by the judge and determined on whether or not it will be allowed or not. So whether it's appropriate evidence, valid evidence or not.
Okay.
So we are going to be going through, and I've had my little AI buddy,
Bradley
answers the chat. He's going to help with explaining the rules.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Very.
Okay. Bradley, take it away.
Hear ye, hear ye. The Christmas courtroom is coming to order. Gather round, noble judge and diligent prosecutor. The prosecutor shall present a concerning case where an accused harbors deep fears that their distress is not because of OCD. The judge must determine if these fears are supported by the evidence. The judge must then make a ruling on whether the prosecutor has met their burden of proof or whether the evidence is inadmissible. Rules. The court reporter will read the case aloud. The prosecutor will argue their case's evidence. The judge can ask up to 3 questions for clarification, after which the judge declares a verdict based on direct evidence in the here and now or imagined conclusions. Switch roles each round and score 1 point per correct verdict. The highest scorer wins the title of Yuletide Justice Bringer. Play fair and merry.
That's right, Bradley.
There's a Cheshire Cat smile on my face. Yeah.
Here's the dealio, okay? We have different cases, 1 through 6. So you're going to start us off with question number 1.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
We're going to listen to Bradley present the case.
Okay.
Just a quickie little review of how this works is you're going to hear the case. You're going to receive evidence based on the case.
Okay. Okay.
That you get to argue.
Okay.
Okay. I, as judge in this situation, because you're a prosecutor, so you're trying to prosecute the accused. You argue the evidence. I get to ask up to 3 questions total. No more. I can do less. I can ask no questions if I feel confident.
Uh-huh.
And then I determine whether you have met the burden of proof that this is valid evidence in here and now, or whether it's in the imagination and inadmissible.
Okay.
Okay. So Bradley, ready?
Your Honor, if it pleases the court, our first case is the People versus Elwood the Elf. Elwood the Elf is being charged with theft for Santa's missing cookies. Santa reports that his Christmas Eve cookie plate is empty too soon, and an elf named Elwood is suspected. Elwood fears he may have accidentally eaten the cookies while distracted during late-night wrapping, though he doesn't remember doing so. One witness statement was reported from elf friend Sparkle. Sparkle reportedly overheard Elwood apologizing after the date in question, saying, "What if I ate them without realizing?" Prosecutor, you may now present your evidence.
Okay.
All right.
So my goal is to convince you that he did steal it.
That we think he did, maybe, yeah. But you have to prove whether this evidence shows that he actually stole it or not. And I will either say this evidence works as clear and convincing evidence or it doesn't.
Okay. Your Honor, it's obvious that Elwood stole and ate the cookies in addition to stealing them. It was a double whammy here. First of all, crumbs near Elwood's desk. Where would crumbs arrive on his desk if not for cookies flying from the lips of his mouth? How in the world would crumbs arrive there? There's no way they could. And there was milk spilled on the workbench next to it. Okay, let's get this straight. When have you ever seen milk next to crumbs? And that didn't mean cookies were eaten. I'm sorry, I rest my case. No, I'm just kidding. I have more.
Meatloaf?
No, I have meatloaf. What? Who are you? No, and you know what? Even though there may have been no eyewitnesses, the reality is, though, that there was an apology. And we heard from the person himself. What if I did it? If there's late night rapping going on, who wouldn't eat cookies? We all would. We know he's guilty. Guilty. You must
admit the evidence.
Admit the evidence and say he's guilty.
Well, he gets to go on a trial.
No. You must admit the evidence and say he's guilty and sentence.
Okay, hang on. I get to...
To death.
Is that all, counsel?
Yes, or, okay. That's it.
I can ask up to 3 questions, you guys. Okay. What is the makeup of the workspace and workbench area in the workshop there at the North Pole?
It's a desk, and he works at his desk. Presents come down on the factory line, and he wraps them. But he does it for so long, it's so much slave labor, he needs to be able to eat. It's clear that he ate the cookies.
Kim?
He ate the cookies.
Is it a communal workspace or just Elwood's private workbench and desk area?
Your Honor, this is a good question, but I will say it is communal, but he does have his own desk in the communal space. Therefore, the fact that it is communal is irrelevant.
Okay. What time was this event allegedly occurring where there were no eyewitnesses working feverishly with Christmas
it had
so close by?
Well, we know it was super late because it was late night rapping.
So that means past 2 a.m.
Oh, uh-huh. Is there proof that it
would you not be hungry for cookies past 2 a.m.?
Is there proof that it was past 2 a.m. or is that what you define, counsel, as late night rapping?
This is what I've heard the other elves say is late night.
Okay. All right. I am going to make my ruling. My ruling is this. Counsel, I do not admit the evidence. Here's why.
No.
Here's why. He is in a communal workspace with crumbs and milk spilled on it, but we know those elves work feverishly.
Yes, they do.
Day and night.
But they don't go.
Their deadline is fast approaching.
Uh-huh.
With no eyewitnesses, which is suspect.
Uh-huh.
And there was no evidence of him on security footage, I noticed. You did not bring that forth. There is no proof that it was Elwood that was guilty. And there are actually, though commonly from my frame of reference and what I hear my friends say, cookies and crumbs involved with milk and cookies.
And apparently meatloaf.
It is not the only option. Yes.
Weird.
Could be meatloaf. It could be a crumble. I don't know. Apple-y crumble, maybe? I don't know.
Permission to approach the bench.
Oh, no. Are you approaching? Okay.
Just kidding. I always wanted to say that.
So I do not admit his evidence because it was all very speculative. You know, who else?
Right.
We don't actually have proof. We're making an inference. Oh, ding, 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 ding. We're making an inference. We're filling in that gap with our imagined conclusion.
In all fairness, I'm a new lawyer here in Santa County. And so they gave me the hardest case. They're like, everybody needs to be prosecuted, so we'll give him the hard case.
Yes. Okay. I'm going to do this case.
Mm-hmm.
Ready? Bradley, take it away.
The second case is the People versus Frosty the Snowman. Frosty is being charged with theft for stolen lights. A neighbor's Christmas lights were stolen and located on Frosty the Snowman. Frosty insists he doesn't recall taking the lights to decorate himself, but he is scared he might have knocked them over while wandering through the yard. Frosty's residence did have a Ring camera, but due to improper installation, there is no video recording available. A third-party neighbor at the crime scene reported Frosty being very clumsy, and he reportedly enjoyed getting lit during the holidays. Prosecutor, you may now present your evidence.
Your Honor, your honorable greatness here.
Yes.
Evidence need not speak louder than the evidence that string lights were found around Frosty, the snowman. The neighbor was missing their lights. Frosty had lights around him. Secondly, getting lit, I think we all know,
don't we,
Your Honor, that getting lit has the ability to impair memory. So doth protest too much, Frosty.
You don't remember
taking something? That reads for someone that is drinking the nog.
Lastly,
there was a resurfaced vine from several years ago. You remember vines.
Mm-hmm.
Showing Frosty getting tipsy during a holiday gathering. Children were there. Frosty was rolling around in the snow. He even lost his nose at one point. So what does this show? Well, A, most significantly, he's covered in the stolen item.
Secondly,
he has a history of drinking. And there's even video evidence of him literally falling apart in the snow.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe that I have met the burden of proof on this evidence.
Mm. All right. Let's see.
Wow, I've really, that's a pickle for you.
I don't know what kind of clarifying question, because I already know how I want to rule.
Well, you don't have to. You can ask up to three, but if you're like, I know, then you can say, I know.
Counsel, this is completely absurd. I already know how I'm going to rule on this one. No questions needed. No further clarification needed.
I have some questions.
Well, too bad. I'm the judge. Any video evidence from several years ago showing him tipsy, it is not evidence for the present situation. Throw it out. That's number one. Number two, yes, getting lit having an ability to impair memory is a very broad statement that can apply to anyone. Throw it out. That doesn't impact this case whatsoever.
You're saying it's over, bro.
Right. And string lights found around Frosty isn't evidence of anything. It's evidence that lights are around him, not that he stole them. I rule that you cannot admit this evidence. This isn't evidence. This is a fraud.
Hey, mister.
Court is adjourned.
Actually, it's not adjourned because we have another case, but I'm sad.
No.
Okay, do you like the game so far?
Yeah, it's cute.
Right? Okay.
Sure.
All right, Sir Bradley, please present our next case for Mr. Morris.
Our third case on today's docket is The People versus the Grinch. The Grinch is accused of stealing ornaments from Whoville's tree. He claims he only meant to admire the ornaments, but is worried he might have accidentally taken some when carrying other items home. A friend of the accused, familiar with the incident, Cindy Lou Who, wonders if the Grinch didn't mean to take them, but possibly did by mistake. She reported that the Grinch's heart grew by 3 sizes that day, perhaps impairing his line of sight. Prosecutor, you may now present your evidence.
That is a big heart. If it impairs his line of sight.
I mean, it's 3 sizes too big. So, you know, I didn't write it, Mr. Seuss. I nor dumped it. Okay. Tale as old as time. Grinch as old as green.
All right, let me think here.
Make your case, man.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Your Honor, this is going to be an easy case here for me. First off, I've got some evidence here that is just, it's very self-explanatory. So in the cave, I present to you in this image that a piece of tinsel was located in the Grinch's cave. Now, I promise you, this is the Grinch we're talking about. He doesn't own tinsel. The man does not own tinsel, all right? If you can call him a man, I guess. There's no tinsel in the Grinch's cave. The only way it can get there is that he brought it there. So first off, we know beyond a shadow of a doubt that he brought things straight off of the tree, straight to his cave. Okay. Next, I give you another piece of evidence. Here is an image of a sled trail leading from Whoville to his cave. Now, excuse me, but since when does he visit Whoville? He must have visited it that day. That's clearly pointing to a guilty verdict here that we need to rule here on. So this is very, very clear evidence. It must be admitted. And lastly, I have here a big file folder. Do you know what's in this, Judge? Well, I do. I'm going to show you. Let me open it up. Look at this. All right. Look at this long record of stealing. Stealing. This Grinch has a record. He's got
3 priors. He's got 45. He's got 45. He's got 45 counts on his license. He is
his
a thief.
License from what?
License to sled, of course.
He is clearly a Grinch with a record of thievery. He is a thief. Now, you can choose to ignore this evidence, but I implore you not to, Judge. Oh, honorable judge. I rest my case for the evidence.
All right. Counsel, what proof do you have that the Grinch never owned a piece of tinsel?
In the image, you can see no other tinsel.
Counsel, I'll ask you twice.
Oh.
What proof do you have that the Grinch did not own any tinsel?
We can call the Grinch to the stand and ask him.
Counsel, we cannot introduce evidence without a burden of proof. Additionally, it says here from a prior motion that Cindy Lou Who, familiar with the incident, as noted earlier in the case history, that she sees him in Whoville, and you just made a case that he never goes to Whoville. But everybody knows the Grinch, mostly because of his prior bad acts, and the rectifying peace offering he showed that did grow his heart to roughly 3 times the size. So, what evidence do we have that the sled trail leading from Whoville to his cave is admissible?
Huh?
That was a very long... Can you shorten it to a sentence?
He goes to Whoville all the time. Cindy just saw him there.
Well,
what,
I would
what
throw
you
the question.
Said he doesn't go. How do you know? Counsel, would be one thing if you argued he goes there all the time. Of course there's going to be sled trails. You said he never goes there.
Never.
Judge, how do you know he goes there?
The burden of proof is not on the court. The burden of the proof is on you, counsel.
But this is a Christmas court.
I will say...
Actually, I should have said,
this is an OCD court.
Ooh, it is.
The rules are different.
A Christmassy OCD court.
Right.
Well, actually, the rules aren't. Here's the magic,
but
counsel.
They feel different.
They feel different, but here's the magic. You still need direct evidence, and this direct evidence is full of irrelevant associations. Prior bad acts that assumes facts not in evidence.
But, Your Honor, it feels so real.
I'm not allowing it. It's
inadmissible. I ruled.
All right. Next case. There are only 3 cases left. We are halfway through.
Okay.
Listen up, sir.
Next, we will hear case number 4, The People versus Jack Frost. Jack Frost is accused of unlawful conduct and aggravated assault with the Sugar Plum Fairy. Jack Frost reported sticky residue on his hands, which he worried resulted from an improper or violent assault with the Sugar Plum Fairy. Jack Frost considered turning himself in for approximately 48 hours prior to this proceeding. A welfare check was conducted on the Sugar Plum Fairy, but the alleged victim denied any improper interactions with Jack Frost. Prosecutor, you may present your evidence.
All right.
That's ridiculous. Sticky residue.
Sticky residue. Your Honor, it is ridiculous. I have evidence that is going to blow this case out of the water. So first of all, for your consideration, I would draw the court's attention to not only was the sticky residue on his hands, but in a forensic investigation, we also found sticky residue found
on Jack Frost's scarf.
A scarf, a common item adorned when coming and going. He was not just in his residence, but the sticky residue was also found on the scarf. Secondly, trying to cover his tracks, but not very well, there were candy cane wrappers in Jack Frost's workshop.
Okay, go on.
There were candy cane wrappers. Why did he need candy canes?
Really?
And candy canes get pretty sticky, don't they?
Ho ho! Proof. Feather Perth.
According to the U.S. Department of Justice, 38% of assault crimes are committed by a friend or
acquaintance.
Okay.
It's educational, too. And according to the Bureau of Justice Statistics, a majority of victims deny allegations for fear of retaliation. So clearly this shows it does not matter that the Sugar Plum Fairy denied all allegations. He is a
friend. He is sticky. He had candy cane wrappers.
And she denied it.
Okay.
I rest my case for this evidentiary hearing.
Okay. Counsel, where in the U.S. Department of Justice's documentation does it mention Jack Frost?
If it pleases the court, I would remind...
It doesn't please that the court.
I am answering your question, number one. Number two, that Jack Frost wasn't mentioned. What was mentioned is 38% of assault crimes are committed by a friend or acquaintance. And Jack Frost, dun, dun, duh... is a friend.
But you said it doesn't mention Jack Frost. Out! Out with that evidence. That is not evidence.
Was it the preponderance of his
order in the court
that he violated the Sugar Plum Fairy?
Order.
Shows consciousness of guilt.
Order. I won't allow it.
Moving forward. All right, now, candy cane wrappers.
I wasn't meaning for all these cases not to.
Candy cane wrappers in Jack Frost's workshop. Here's the next question I have for you on this.
Bring it.
Counsel. Is that it? Is that it? Just candy cane wrappers? What does that prove? What does that show? Maybe he likes to eat candy canes. He's Jack Frost.
Might I remind you, the Sugar Plum Fairy is sugary sweetness.
Uh-huh.
And if we refer to the case law here, we look and we can see that paraphernalia of evidence of a crime, thus the wrappers, were found. That is admissible as proof that he could have possibly assaulted.
Okay. Denied. All right. Moving forward. Sticky residue found on Jack Frost's scarf. I ask you, what was the sticky residue?
The sticky residue, per forensic testing, was trace candy cane.
Trace candy cane.
Right. Meaning the residue.
Mm-hmm.
Can be traced and or is candy cane.
And how was the Sugar Plum Fairy beaten?
I think you've exceeded your number of questions.
Oh, okay.
Your Honor.
Well, I don't admit the evidence. You failed.
Did you say beaten?
No. When did she get beat?
Well, wasn't that the story?
It was a different kind of assault.
Oh. Oh, yuck. With candy canes?
And wrappers.
Oh my gosh. Now I understand why you were scoffing the whole time. Oh my. Okay, moving forward. Ugh. That was sugar. A nasty one.
That's OCD for you. OCD gets nasty.
Here
is the next case.
Your Honor, may I present case number 5, The People versus Mrs. Claus. Mrs. Claus is accused of harassment in the workplace. A colleague known as Elf Doe Number 1 previously accused Mrs. Claus of fiddling with the naughty list, putting elves who argued with her on the list as retaliation. Mrs. Claus insists she didn't change anything but worries that she might have accidentally smudged the list when double-checking it. Prosecutor, you may present your evidence.
All right, prosecutor, if you can, wow me.
Your Honor, I present to you, based on some evidence that I helped curate with the help of a handwriting expert here, the handwriting clearly matches Mrs. Claus because we have been able to analyze it against a large number of her small notes. She has a habit of making small notes, and we were able to really thoroughly analyze the handwriting. So clearly there is a match with the handwriting. Secondly, Mrs. Claus was the last one seen near the list. So there you go. Yeah, I mean, mic drop. Except I'm not going to drop this mic. Lastly, we spoke with all of the elves, and I can tell you, none of them saw Mrs. Claus making intentional changes.
Counsel, how does that help your case?
I think...
You are alleging she fiddled with the list.
And you're saying no elves saw her fiddle?
What am I drinking over here?
Please clarify.
Let me clarify.
No elves saw her making changes intentionally. They saw her making changes, but not intentionally.
Council, she said she, in her...
Wait, am I in the defense or the prosecution?
In her defendant statement.
She insists she didn't change anything, but worries she might have accidentally smudged the list. You're saying handwriting matches.
Yes.
She was the last one seen.
And no elves saw her making intentional changes.
Right.
That matches
with her purported sharing that she may have accidentally smudged the list. There's no there there, counsel.
I suppose. So how do you rule?
Frankly, fam, I didn't have an idea because it depends on how it was argued, whether it could become relevant or not.
And so far, I'm going to have to say it's inadmissible.
You have not proven your burden of proof, counsel. I was with you, counsel. I'm not going to help people crime better, but I was with you on handwriting matches.
Mm-hmm.
We have a forensic expert.
Yes.
She was the last one seen. I was going to ask who was the eyewitness that saw her. And I am very confused by
no elves saw her making intentional changes.
Because that debunks it. And B, with
elf doe number one. Now, had you said
they, again, for fear of retaliation, did not admit to it other than in this anonymous affidavit. But that is not what you said, counsel. So I am denying this motion. The evidence is not permissible.
Oh, shucks.
Last but not least, Bradley. The fine Bradley has been doing an excellent job. Here we go. Let's listen.
The final case before the court today is the People versus Blitzen. Blitzen is accused with reckless endangerment. His project manager, Rudolph, stated that Blitzen tampered with the sleigh's harness to make Rudolph look bad. Blitzen denies it, but fears he might have damaged the harness while testing its strength earlier in the day for its vehicle inspection. No elves were present at the time, as they were reportedly searching for Santa's missing cookies. Prosecutor, you may present your evidence.
Wow, a little tie-in to the first one. This was quite a chaotic day up at the North Pole. So much happened and so much prosecution.
Every day.
Apparently there's lawyers up there.
I have to say every day at the North Pole is a hot,
so,
hot mess.
So what we've learned is that the North Pole is very litigious. Because every little thing that happens, there's a trial. Trial!
Trial!
Trial.
Your Honor, if I may. I want to first present Exhibit A. You may wonder, doth my eyes deceive me? No, Your Honor. It is frayed straps, and they were found near Blitzen's stable. Also, Blitzen's antler marks, per our forensic diagnostics, show his antler marks on the sleigh. Wouldn't you know, inches from the harness. If some doe was nuzzling or chewing at that harness, if we take out this ruler
I happen to bring into court today, would not Blitzen's antlers rub against the sleigh? Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But lastly, Your Honor, records show
two prior HR complaints
regarding Rudolph for alleged reindeer intimidation and bullying. I know it seems like a plot twist, but bear with me, Your Honor. Rudolph, with his nose so bright, so proud, has been under a lot of heat.
Mm-hmm.
And while it could seem very easy to say, Blitzen was famed,
he works with that sleigh. Of course his antler marks are gonna be there. Blitzen's been doing this gig for years. Of course the straps will fray.
But I want you to consider Rudolph and his history. And his conniving. And his nose so bright, he got a bright idea.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I can pull this off. And I can make it look like it was Blitzen when it was really me.
Objection, leading the judge.
But
that's what Blitzen wanted you to think.
Oh.
That Rudolph did that because of Rudolph's character.
Oh.
We do not get to use character evidence to impeach Rudolph. And Blitzen was this mastermind. And even if you don't believe me, Judge,
nothing can replace the frayed straps.
Your blitz and stall.
All right.
I rest.
Counsel, that was quite a colorful story. So these HR complaints, how do they relate to the case in question currently?
I'm glad you asked, because I agree completely that they're irrelevant and a distraction, that Rudolph would be a mastermind behind this, but really Blitzen knows that Rudolph knows that we might think so.
That sounds an awful lot like conjecture. Next, antler marks on the sleigh. Well, did Blitzen ever fly with the sleigh? Yes.
Well, it does not prove, it does not disprove that those are Blitzen's.
Sure.
Antler marks, excuse
but
me.
I throw that out because that is
objection.
Not
objection.
Overruled.
You didn't even hear my ground.
On what grounds?
Assumes facts not in evidence.
Overruled.
Why? Objection.
Order in the court, or I will hold you in contempt.
Oh. None of these ended up being true. I didn't mean for
Blitzen's
every scenario
antler
to be untrue.
Overruled. Blitzen's antler marks on the sleigh are not evidence. They are coincidental at best. Frayed straps near Blitzen's stable. Come on. How many straps do you think he wears? This is a rhetorical question,
that's
counsel.
That's what she said.
How many straps do you think he wears from time to time that are frayed? He's probably replacing them all the time. Blitzen is thrown out. The end.
All right.
Case dismissed. That no is evidence. Go home, everybody. Court is adjourned.
That is it.
Nice. That was fun.
Thought at least one of those cases, the evidence would be admissible. Like, we could make
well,
the
maybe
case.
This is a good lesson that most of the time, things aren't as real as they feel.
Well, feelings aren't facts.
Right. Most
Wait
of the time.
Cross stitch that on a pillow.
Right.
Feelings aren't facts.
Maybe it makes sense that we are illustrating that most of the time, in fact, very rarely, would you even have something that's true evidence that points to guilty, right? Most of the time, things are going to be intrusive thoughts or not based on true evidence. And it's learning how to see that, right?
Yeah.
It's now, a good lesson.
Feelings aren't facts is a good point, because feelings can be very absorbing and overwhelming. And what some people listening to this game might wonder is, how is this not just ruminating and trying to engage in a solving compulsion with an intrusive thought from, say, more a behavioral perspective, right? And what I would say to that is, we're not debating OCD. We're literally looking for any semblance of the smallest, like, preponderance of truth or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking for a shred of evidence that that's actually happening now.
Right.
Guess what, guys? If we do find a shred of evidence, then that's reasonable. We have here and now proof, right? So if I look down and I have a weird, funky mole and I go, oh, that's a weird, funky mole, that's proof that I'm seeing it in the here and now. Versus
that you
just
have a weird, funky mole.
That I have a weird,
but that's
funky
it.
Mole.
That's not then, evidence for something far larger
right.
and sinister.
I have to seek evidence for that. And if I go right. and get that mole biopsied and the mole is nothing, it's a nothing burger,
right.
then I have evidence that it's a nothing burger.
Right.
If I have evidence that, oh my gosh, that could be cancerous or precancerous, then that's going to come in the results. Without those results, jumping to that conclusion is an inference that's filling the gap between two points in that journey. But it's based in the imagination. So we're not actually trying to solve anything. We're looking for evidence and we're following the evidence. We're following, Patrick and I just saw Wicked.
Loved it.
Mm-hmm.
We're following the yellow brick road. If the brick road doesn't go off here in the field.
Right.
We're following right. the yellow brick road. We're staying on the path. And so it's not rumination. It is a matter of looking for the direct evidence that I should be concerned about. And you know what? If I see a marker that's like, this is concerning, or I get feedback, you know what? That is a cancerous mole. Then I can freak out about having cancer. But OCD being the cruel little bitch it is, will say, you know what? It could be, and it probably is. And you have this family history, and we have all this logic and reasoning that we can use to back up. And now I have an over-reliance on possibility that in here and now, I have this problem, but it is an irrelevant association if I don't have the direct evidence to connect to it. So it's not rumination. It's literally actually fact finding. And it's just going, do I have any basis for this? Would this pass the sniff test?
And so this game was about passing the sniff test.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that is, it's an important but difficult thing. That is the game. Usually we play an ERP game and an ICBT game.
That was fun, though.
Clever and witty, right?
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. It was fun role-playing and stuff.
Yes. And what I will say, as a person with lived experience and something that I say often here on the podcast is, folks with OCD are some of the most creative people I've ever met. And so that same creativity that can enrich a story, enrich a vignette, add little details that make it funny or witty or connect more, is the same level of detail that can go into those obsessional doubts and intrusive thoughts. And so, as I've said many, many times, but I'll continue to say here, and for anyone new joining is, you know, the same brilliant minds that went out and saw this white dot that would shapeshift. Sometimes it was a hole, sometimes it was a half, sometimes it was a sliver, sometimes it's missing altogether. And said, you know what, I'm going to build some kind of contraption, some kind of machine, and I'm going to go there. It takes so much brilliance to be able to figure that out.
Absolutely.
To leave this atmosphere, to go travel into space, not only travel to space, land on the moon, build an international space station. So that same creativity applied, that same fuel applied to our intrusive fears, our distress, our obsessional doubts.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely are going to create a IMAX version, 3D, 4D, immersive, absorbing, scary story. But just as the game we just played showed, it's not reality unless mm-hmm. we can have evidence. Because we need evidence.
We
need evidence.
Real evidence.
To know it's reality.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So with that, ho, ho, ho.
Ho, ho, ho.
Ho, ho, ho.
So that's our game for today.
Yeah.
And for this year. And Patrick, it was nice having you back on the podcast. It's been a hot, or shall we say cold, because it's
cold
earth.
Minute.
Been a cold minute.
Yeah. I'm glad to be back. And I'm so proud of your work you're doing. It's amazing.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. All the guests you've had and all the people that you're reaching, and it's just beautiful to see.
Thank you, Patrick. I appreciate that.
It's true.
So have a merry holiday season to all that celebrate, whether it's Christmas, Hanukkah. And just thank you for being a part of the fam. And thank you, Patrick. As I say, we're better together.
Better together.
Love you.
Love you, too.
Intrusive thoughts. All right. Family. It was fun. So as I mentioned earlier, I actually thought there was some room for some of these cases to have more direct evidence. It depends on how the cases are argued. And that's true with OCD, too, because often we can confuse argument with evidence or proof. So if I worried that I made a mistake, just like Mrs. Claus did in her case, and I reasoned that I've made mistakes before, so it's possible, then it can be really tempting to take that argument as evidence. In ICBT, we learned that's because we all use different logic and reasoning categories to come to these conclusions. And our logic isn't bad logic. In fact, it serves us very well in non-obsessional areas. So what's the difference? Well, if I have proof here and now of a doubt, then I can say that doubt is reasonable. And I'm going to react to that and give it the weight in the here and now that it deserves. But if my imagination is filling in the blanks and I'm reacting based on what that could mean for me, then I'm allowing that argument, which I would further call out as a reasoning error, and I would throw that out because it's not based in factual evidence, but it's based in my imagination. So this game aims to have a little fun with that idea. And I tell you, sometimes being able to look at a case vignette or a silly story, as we did in this game, makes it easier to flesh out. Because when it's our own content or our family members' content, it feels harder to be objective. But just as we could practice this skill here, we can practice this in our own lives too. So for today's intrusive thought segment, which is the application segment of my show, I'm going to share this game over on this episode's blog at OCDFamilyPodcast.com because the stories and the prosecutor's presentation of the evidence can have endless variations. We're very good at creating stories. So if you're intrigued or just want to have some fun with your family while exposing OCD's cons, check it out. Each vignette has a case description, as Bradley articulated, and evidence cards where the prosecutor gets the facts that they are allowed to present. How you present them, how you argue them, whether it's verifiable direct evidence or an over-reliance on possibility that lacks direct evidence and is wrought with irrelevant associations, you get to be the judge. But what's more is that even though you can play this with two people, you could play it with more. You shift that judge role to a jury type or a Supreme Court justice. I don't know. You can even present your own cases. Maybe suss out one of your loved one's obsessional sequences with their permission. There's lots of flexibility and fun at OCD's expense. And who doesn't love that? Because even though OCD is so painful and is so cruel, it's also so beautiful. So let's get to playing, fam. Happy holidays. We've got this.
Thank you for joining me and our OCD family community. If you enjoyed what you heard today, please like and subscribe to the OCD Family Podcast wherever you enjoy your podcasts. Did you find this content helpful? Please consider leaving a review. The more people that know they're not alone, the better. For more information regarding today's podcast, please visit OCDFamilyPodcast.com and remember to join the email list while you're there. Provide you with the most up-to-date information, resources, and the down low on the family chatter. Oh yeah, nothing says family
like Patrick and me beating up on OCD.
That's right, I went there. And you can too at OCDFamilyPodcast.com.
Therapists, ready to shape the future of pediatric OCD treatment? Join the Next Steps in Pediatric OCD on-demand course from Angela Adamson Springer, LCSW, and learn how to adapt inference-based cognitive behavioral therapy for kids. With research still emerging, this course empowers you to explore new methods and contribute to the growing field of evidence-based practices. With OCD Training School's 365-day access for on-demand courses, you'll gain practical tools to help kids by adapting ICBT's signature 12 modules to be as creative as the kiddos you're treating. So sign up at OCDFamilyPodcast.com/courses to support the podcast at no extra cost and support further growth and hope for our youngest of warriors.